Good evening. Welcome to Left, Right and Center. I'm Vishnu Shom on the program tonight. India could belatedly have a new U.S. ambassador, a post that's been vacant for more than 2 years. Sounds pretty standard, doesn't it? Well, not quite. It's the choice of President Biden's nominee that is potentially problematic. Eric Garcetti's nomination is now at the final stages with the U.S. Senate considering his case. In fact, that Senate hearing should be happening anytime now. After that, there'll be a full Senate vote. Now, Garcetti, the former Los Angeles mayor, faces some pretty serious allegations. We'll be looking at what those allegations are. We'll also be looking at some of Mr. Garcetti's priorities as he gets set to come here. That is, assuming that he is cleared. He said that he's going to focus a great deal on human rights in India. Are his concerns, for example, with the Citizenship Amendment Act, something that he's voiced his concerns over? Is that going to be amenable to the government over here? Later on the show, the banking major Credit Suisse has seen its shares crash more than 20% to record lows after its main shareholder flatly refused to pump in more money, a move which has brought down shares in several other European banks. What is the impact of this crash? The former chief economic advisor Krishnamurthy Subramanian joins me. And finally, the impasse in Parliament over Rahul Gandhi's comments on Indian democracy at Cambridge University, the Adani Hindenburg row, and the opposition allegations of misuse of central investigative agencies is likely to continue through the second half of the budget session. Sources indicating that the government, whose top priority in this session is to pass the finance bill, has been unrelenting and will continue to be unrelenting in its attack on Mr. Gandhi over his comments. But first, let's take a look at Joe Biden's choice for America's ambassador, Eric Garcetti, to New Delhi, somebody who faces serious allegations. Let's bring you details of what we're talking about before we discuss this. Now, Mr. Garcetti is accused of not preventing his chief aide, Rick Jacobs, from sexually harassing a number of employees. His former chief communications director has said that Garcetti is unfit to hold public office anywhere in the world. The White House has refused to comment on the allegations. Garcetti has insisted that he was unaware of the allegations against his mayoral advisor, accused of crude sex banter, providing inappropriate massages and unwanted hugs. Garcetti apparently was aware of this, didn't stop it at all, which is why there are question marks on his role or his control over his own office. Now, a non-profit called Whistleblower Aid says it is extremely unlikely that Garcetti was unaware of his aide's behavior and he needs to be accountable. Significantly, Garcia is reported to share close links with the Chinese Communist Party's United Front Works Department, believed to be a front for the Chinese government involved in operations to influence key people. In India, the United Front Works Department has been banned from receiving funding. So that's another area that needs to be looked at. Now, Mr. Garcetti has also testified to the U.S. Senate that his focus as ambassador would be to emphasize human rights issues, including what he has said was discrimination through India's Citizenship Amendment Act. Now, the focus on human rights, Garcetti has said, will be at the core of his responsibilities in New Delhi. Human rights is a sensitive theme here in India, with the Foreign Minister, Dr. Jaishankar, having also told the United States in the past that the U.S. has human rights issues as well.
India was just downgraded from the annual report by Freedom House from free to partly free. They recently enacted a Citizenship Amendment Act that is very much aimed against the Muslim population within India. So the same question to you, if you could be a little more specific. India is an incredibly important strategic partner of the United States, but the human rights records there are certainly anything but the way we would like to see them. So how do you balance our need to work with India as a strategic partner, but making advancements on behalf of human rights?
Well, thank you very much, Senator. There's no question that the U.S.-India relationship should be underpinned by our common commitment to democracy, to human rights, and to civil society. It's enshrined in our constitutions, the oldest democracy in the world and the largest democracy in the world. And human rights, in defense of democracy, is a pillar of our foreign policy. But to answer specifically, if confirmed, I will actively raise these issues. I'll raise them with humility. It's a two-way street on these. But I intend to engage directly with civil society. There are groups that are actively fighting for the human rights of people on the ground in India that will get direct engagement from me. We know that democracies are complicated. We can look at our own and at India's. But it's a cornerstone of our shared values. And I just want to say, for me, these will not be afterthoughts. My master's degree is in human rights and international law. I've fought for human rights on four different continents, and it'll be a core part of what I will pursue with my Indian counterparts, if confirmed.
I believe the citizenship amendment was passed just recently. The way it looks like it's going to be implemented, it'll be very discriminatory against the Muslim population, which is very, very large. So do we have your commitment that you will be a voice in regards to any discrimination against minority groups such as the Muslim population within India?
Absolutely, Mr. Cardin. Thank you, Senator. And I would not only just bring it up, but it would not be something at the end as an obligation. It will be a core piece of what I'll be engaging my Indian counterparts have confirmed with.
All right. So CAA, the Citizenship Amendment Act, will be at the core of what Eric Garcetti expects to do if he's in India. Remember, there is that Senate vote. It's not quite a done deal as yet. Joining us to look at Garcetti, his legacy, some of the issues over there, Amitabh Mattu, Shashank, the former Foreign Secretary, Suhasini Haider, and Nish Acharya, an advisor to the Biden administration. Mr. Acharya, let me come to you first. The allegations are very strong as far as him looking away when there was clear-cut sexual harassment within his office when he was mayor of Los Angeles. Why would President Biden want someone like him to be ambassador?
So thank you for having me. I think I would say I can't comment on the specific allegations without knowing much about them, but I think the reasons he picked Mayor Garcetti are pretty clear. He actually oversaw the second largest city in the United States, and from an Indian-American perspective, the or diaspora perspective, maybe the third or fourth largest diaspora in the world. And so he's very familiar with our community, Indian culture, Indian, what's going on in India, because every Indian politician who comes to the U.S. often visits L.A., often has met with him. The Olympics are something that he's secured, and obviously India will have a large contingent there. So he has a lot of expertise and understanding of the issues that the U.S.-India relationship faces, particularly at the community human level. And I think what President Biden was looking for was somebody who can translate that to the bilateral relationship, which has been for most of history very formal, very much about formal meetings, and is now transitioning to another stage where it's really about the people and the relationships and bilateral trade. And Garcetti is really somebody who sits at the intersection of both of those things. And I think that's why President Biden nominated him, but also wants him to succeed in that role.
Suhasini, what is the process? Because it's going to start now. I ask this because, the allegations against him, and we've seen his former communications advisor, Naomi Seligman, come out very, very strongly and list specific examples of crude sexual banter, a colleague of his providing inappropriate massages, unwanted hugs, this, that, and the other. Again, the question, and she's testified to this, right? Isn't this, why would India accept something like this, an individual with this record, unless the charges are entirely dismissed?
Well, obviously, those charges have to be proven in a court of law that would disqualify him. At the moment, none of these charges are new. There was a Senate committee that went into the investigation as well. It proved inconclusive. Now, the truth is, Vishnu, we're at a position now where Mr. Garcetti was nominated by President Biden in July 2021. They could not get the numbers in the Senate in that first round in order to push his nomination through to confirm it. In November, the Democrats won a tiny lead in the Senate, so they're now 51-49, yes, which has given them new hope that they will be able to push this vote through tonight. I think it will happen sometime overnight. Even so, up till the last moment, and that interview on CNN is important because it seems to indicate that there are still misgivings, particularly within the Democratic ecosphere, if you like, about his nomination. They need to get a majority, not just for the confirmation. Before that, there will be something called a cloture vote, That motion has been put together by the Biden administration simply because they want to be quite sure of the numbers in the Senate before they actually have that final vote. It is very rare. It would be extremely embarrassing and humiliating for the Biden administration if the vote would, for some reason, fall short. But remember, when they have this tiny majority in the Senate, every Democrat present will have to vote for them to be able to push this through. And that's what they've been working on. That's why even within the last 24 hours, the vote has been pushed forward by yet another day. Your question about why should India accept him? Let's be clear. India agreed to Eric Garcetti's agreement as early as 2021. As soon as the U.S. sent it, India said, it's fine with us. It's your process. Whoever you choose to send, it is absolutely okay. But 2 years later, I think the question has to be asked of both governments. If somebody is having so much trouble being confirmed, is it worth it to wait even more time before actually just putting a career officer or someone who will not have to go through the same hoops in place? Because what it means is India has not had a U.S. ambassador here for more than 2 years. This is the longest ever such period since independence. That a U.S. ambassador has not been over here. There isn't much time to go for this term of President Biden. The U.S. will be in election mode by the end of this year. So even if Mr. Garcetti was to be confirmed tonight, lands up in Delhi tomorrow, he would only have that period in which to work with before the election season takes over. Finally, the question, there is a state visit that has been outlooked or proposed by Prime Minister Modi to Washington. The real race is for Washington to get someone in place just for the final logistics even.
Yeah.
Obviously, both sides will tell you it doesn't matter. Even without ambassadors, they have been able to run a very, very successful relationship. But it is the little things. It is the little areas that an ambassador looks at, takes the temperature on a daily basis, where somewhere bilateral relations are losing out right now.
Amitabh Mattu, do you see this entire process being played out in the U.S. Senate as a done deal? Or do you believe that given the small majority that the Democrats have, that, you know, if people vote against Garcetti, it could end up being a huge embarrassment?
It would be a huge embarrassment if Garcetti is not confirmed. But I genuinely feel that it's a done deal. And I actually believe, quite apart from the allegations that have been made, that Garcetti is an outstanding candidate. As someone who's followed his career path, he was a Rhodes Scholar at Oxford, studied at the LSC, was the youngest mayor of Los Angeles for over a decade, transformed that city, a city which has a divided city after the Rodney King riots, and was one of the most progressive mayors of that city. Quite true, I think that these allegations are serious, but more important is the fact that Garcetti enjoys the confidence of the President of the United States. Remember, Biden had nominated him for a cabinet position initially, and now twice he's nominated him to be ambassador to Delhi, to Roosevelt House. That just tells you the equation that Biden has with Garcetti. The last time any ambassador in New Delhi had that equation was Blackwell,
yeah,
with George Bush Jr. So frankly speaking, I think while we may be concerned about what are serious allegations, I think Garcetti's approach would be to build relations in a manner in which he's actually built relations wherever he's gone.
And that Amitabh, is problematic. In fact, let me put that to Ambassador Shashank. Sir, on the issue of the Citizenship Amendment Act, he's absolutely clear that that needs to be a prime focus. He's actually deposed, and we heard those statements of his. There's this entire set of allegations now emerging on his association with Chinese front companies. The same Chinese front has been restricted by the government of India in receiving funding. Now, these are red flags for India typically, right? Particularly the issue of human rights, where our government has been very, it's not taken kindly to any accusations. So how do you actually see the situation evolve with Garcetti potentially coming here?
Well, Garcetti has made his life very, very difficult, and it will become even more difficult once he lands in India, because Government of India may give him all welcome, but the point is that there are going to be demonstrations against him, there are going to be agitations against him on the lines that India is a democratic country like USA is a democratic country. And if USA listens to the Muslim population living in America, that Indians are being discriminated, especially against the Muslims, because they don't believe in the national boundaries. They believe in Islam. Whereas the Hindu community perhaps has not talked about it. Christian community has not talked about the Indians. So the idea is that he's supposed to especially take up the question of discrimination against the Muslims under the CAA. And he said that he will make a special point, and it will not just be part of the agenda, but it will be the main agenda that he will take up. So I think he's going to make his life very difficult. If I remember Blackwell, he came with a very positive outlook towards India. And he brought also Ashley Tallis with him to advise him on the Indian matters. And he had studied India for a long time. Similarly, I remember Mulford was very, very friendly with us, and he always talked very positively. Now, I have not seen anything very positive from Mr. Eric Garcetti, except that he would take up the human rights issues very clearly. He will contact the human rights groups in India and directly deal with them. Well, we don't mind. I mean, that means that we are democracies and we don't mind many of these things happening. But the point is that if he says that that is going to be his main agenda, I think he's making his life very difficult.
Vishnu, if I can jump in here, just real quick. I think it's really important to remember that there's nearly 1 million Indian Americans in the Los Angeles area. And so Eric Garcetti, more than anybody who's ever been ambassador from the United States to India, has actually had constituents who are either Indian citizens who've moved to the U.S. or Indians of Indian ancestry. And so every other ambassador spoke diplomatic language and official tones. He is actually, you know, he's played holy. He's gone to Diwali festivals. He's gone to communities. He's addressed the issue of how Indian and Hindu culture is taught in schools in California. This is a man who understands far more about the Indian subcontinent than any ambassador. And I've worked with several of the ambassadors named before. So his knowledge of what's going on is huge. Second quick point I'll make, any ambassador candidate has to be approved by the Senate, and they are all going to face the same conflict simply because of politics, right? So in the United States, the only candidates who get a free pass, if you will, are those who are former senators.
Nish, I understand all of this. Yeah. Nish, I get the point. Amitabh, half a second. Nish, I get the point that you're trying to make, that he's a friend of India. He's extremely experienced in dealing with Indians in the United States, migrants, etc., etc. But the larger point is India is a government which is incredibly sensitive whenever the issue of human rights is brought up. I mean, I asked the visiting U.S. Secretary of Defense a question on whether human rights would come up in his conversations in the ministry. Yes. This was sometime last year. And the reaction to that was, you know, I mean, why should that at all be something that, you know, emerges? How is that a focus, et cetera, et cetera? But for America, it has been a focus at certain levels. Is this something you're going to, you know, he's going to look at much more closely? Because if he does, then the reaction over here might be quite strong. Nish, Amitabh, I'll come to you next. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think because he's dealt with that as mayor, he will probably know how to address it better than career ambassadors who are forced into the public eye. So I think he'll deal with it just fine. I think he'll know how to talk about it in private as well as in public in a way, because Indian Americans are equally sensitive about those things.
Do you seriously expect him to talk about the Citizenship Amendment Act in India in public?
No. No, I don't.
Amitabh, you had a point. Go ahead.
Yeah, Vishnu, the point is that, first of all, given that how partisan American politics is even today, there are things that you need to say to your domestic constituents. So not every response to every question should be taken as the cornerstone of the relationship that we have built over the last decades. What Garcetti said in response to a question is, frankly, quite nuanced in any case. He says it's a two-way street, that shared commitment to human rights is the cornerstone of our common values. And he talked about the fact that human rights is something which is going to be big on his agenda, but that doesn't mean that this is going to be bigger than the fact.
No, but
of
didn't
him
he say that
relations.
CAA was at the core of something that he needed to deal with?
Yes, I mean, like several other
if
issues.
If that's the case,
remember
that's,
this
if
is.
That's the case.
Remember,
that's all that, yeah. Sorry.
Remember also the fact. Remember also the fact that he comes from a city, which, as Mr. Acharya pointed out, has a large diasporic population, a large multicultural population, and he has had to deal with that. He has had to deal with a divided city, which is so divided after the Rodney King incident.
We're talking about what would happen once he comes over here. And let me put that to Suhasini. Suhasini, how has New Delhi not taken kindly to any accusations of human rights violations in India?
No, and certainly that will be a landmine for him to navigate when he does come to Delhi. My point is much larger. Obviously, a U.S. ambassador comes here with a certain role. He's not coming here to be critical of India in any way. And I think to continuously use only one clip from what he said in December 2021 does not really do justice to what the role of the U.S. ambassador is. My point is very different. If the India-U.S. relationship matters to both governments, why is it that the U.S. cannot find more than one person who may be very eminently qualified for the job? But over a period of 2 years, surely there is somebody else in the entire United States political and diplomatic sphere who would be able to do the job. All I'm saying is it almost seems as if they would rather have no ambassador to India than to have an ambassador at all. And it is a credit to the India-U.S. relationship that neither side has made too much of a noise about the fact that there's no ambassador here. Many might even ask, do we need an ambassador if you can go so long without having a U.S. ambassador in India? Six different chargé d'affaires have taken over the role at the head of the U.S. embassy. That mission includes the embassy and so many consulates around the country, 2,000 employees, I think, in all. Is the case then that you would rather have Mr. Garcetti or nobody at all? Because you're heading towards the end of the, you're already into more than 2 years of a four-year term.
All right.
And you're
I would wish you one last point. I would put that argument over its head. The fact that Biden is so keen on Garcetti tells you how important he feels Garcetti is for this relationship.
Okay.
Surely there is somebody in the entire United States of America.
Well, Biden doesn't think so, and he is the president of the United States.
Look, I think it's more important that he clears these allegations against him on looking the other way when there were sexual harassment accusations, and these are testimonies, right? I mean, he needs to clear those allegations. Let's not forget about the seriousness of these charges. We'll leave it over there. I'd like to thank you all very much for joining us, but I suspect this is something we'll be looking at closely over the next couple of days. Thanks very much indeed. Well, we're going to take a short break at this stage, come back with a lot more, including the meltdown at Credit Suisse. What does it mean? Well, now on to a huge story creating waves in the international financial markets. The banking major Credit Suisse has seen its shares crash more than 20% to record lows after its main shareholder flatly refused to pump in more money, a move which has brought down shares in several other European banks. Credit Suisse, the second largest bank in Switzerland, has been shaken recently by a series of scandals. What is the impact of this crash in simple terms? How is it going to impact the banking sector potentially around the world? Joining us now, Krishnamurthy Subramanian, the economist who till recently served as chief economic advisor to the government of India. Thanks very much, Mr. Subramanian, for being with us. Now, shares of Credit Suisse have lost more than one quarter of their value. They've hit a record low. This is after their biggest shareholder, the Saudi National Bank, told outlets that they wouldn't inject more money into the ailing Swiss bank. Why would the Saudi National Bank not want to inject more money into Credit Suisse? What's the problem?
So Vishnu, I think the Saudi bank deciding not to put more money into Credit Suisse is symptomatic of the problems that the American and possibly the European banks are witnessing. If we focus on the American banks, and you would recall the fiasco at Silicon Valley Bank and also at Signature Bank in New York, it actually has been an outcome of what started the badly judged policy that the United States implemented during COVID, which was, spending like there was no tomorrow. Allow me to explain why this is the case. There were two main effects of that. One, inflation, and therefore the significant tightening that the Fed had to do. There's been a 5% increase in the policy rate in just 6 months, which is the largest increase in four decades in the United States. That was the first effect. The second effect that actually, is more nuanced, but I think that's what is really leading to this banking, sector problems, was the fact that the welfare programs or the subsidies that were given during COVID was, not well targeted at all, unlike, in India, for instance. When subsidies or money is given in the hands of the poor, that enhances consumption significantly. But when it is given across the board, rich do not spend as much, don't have as many opportunities to spend, especially during the lockdown phase. And so that went into savings. If you look at the actual numbers then, the increase in deposits, with the U.S. commercial banks was $5 trillion. In contrast, because the demand did not pick up, consumption did not pick up as much, the lending was only $2 trillion. Now, there's a gap of $3 trillion. Where does that go? It has to go somewhere. It went into, about a half of that went into, U.S. treasuries and what are called agency securities. These are securities, the value of which essentially, decreases when the interest rates go up. That is exactly what happened, when the Fed had to, combat inflation from right. this spending, like there's no tomorrow. So the banks are sitting on now almost $600 billion plus, unrealized losses, which is cumulatively about 30% of the U.S. banking sector's equity. 30%. That's a very large number. So, and at this time, no investor would want to put in equity into a bank. And that is why, the Saudi bank has refused to put in equity into Credit Suisse.
So here's my second question, and it's a basic one. Now, the Credit Suisse stock price has brought down the shares of stock crash has brought down shares of other European banks in double digits in some cases. Do you believe that this knock-on effect will continue? Are we looking at something that's going to seriously destabilize the banking sector, not just in Europe, but perhaps outside as well? What sort of exposure would Credit Suisse have to, let's say, Asian markets?
So I'm, I've studied the U.S. banking sector very carefully, and I can say, with confidence, I put out a thread as well on Twitter, which has since gone viral, showing the effect of the fiscal profligacy and spending like there's no tomorrow. I think the U.S. banking system is certainly impacted, even taking into account the program that the Fed has brought out the discount window. I would like to think I've actually not checked the data for the European banks the way I actually talked about for the American banks, the increase in deposits, lending, etc. So I've not looked at the data, but if I may speculate, I would think that a similar phenomenon might have manifested there as well, because the COVID programs actually were very similar, in Europe to those in the United States. So I wouldn't be surprised if, banks in Europe are also sitting on large unrealized losses, but I don't have the data to back that particular up, claim, and therefore I'm being a little bit more speculative. So I would say that, the American and the European banks, may be impacted. Other emerging economies that actually followed the template of the United States, Europe, I think might also possibly be looking at similar situations. I must mention that India will definitely be the positive exception here, because we did not spend like there was no tomorrow. We were very, prudent in the way we spent. I would like to recall, this is in some way like the series of accidents that happened in India itself, following the global financial crisis, and these are quote unquote accidents because they resulted from myopic policy making that right. eventually led to India becoming part of the Fragile Five. I think a similar phenomenon manifesting in different ways, but a series of accidents, I think that might manifest both in the American and the European economy, and possibly in some other emerging economies that just copy-pasted their policies.
So just a final question to you. In terms of background, the Saudi National Bank, as I understand it, invested $1.5 billion, and they acquired about 10%, less than 10% on Credit Suisse, and they banked on Credit Suisse, revealing a new strategy to deal with several bad decisions, right? They've taken bad bets, for example, on hedge funds. There was the spying scandal as well involving their rival UBS. This was one mistake after the other at Credit Suisse, poor decisions at one level, which have ultimately caused this, right?
Right. What I'm talking about, Vishnu, here is actually not about an individual bank, right? I'm talking about problems that, span the entire banking sector. If it is the case that, as it is with the American banks, European banks are also sitting on investments in securities, which have to be marked down in value because of the raise in the policy rates, then the problems actually are beyond Credit Suisse. Credit Suisse, of course, I think is in a worse situation because of the governance problems that preceded this. But my sense is the fall in the shares of the other European banks, I think, suggests I will maybe the next couple of days go and check the data on, is there a similar phenomenon at play in the European banks? I suspect there may be, but I don't have the numbers to back it.
Sure.
And that is why I'm actually being a little bit more careful there.
All right. Thanks very much for joining us. Just one point as we leave. Yesterday, Credit Suisse, in fact, published its annual report for 2022. And they've apparently identified key, and I quote, material weaknesses. One would suggest that the use of those words is a bit of a red herring. It's a lot more than material weaknesses. There's been a massive crash and there will be an impact. Thanks, Dr. Subramanian, for sort of explaining to us in easy terms what this is all about. Thanks very much indeed. We're going to move on. The impasse in Parliament over Rahul Gandhi's comments on India's democracy at Cambridge University, the Adani Hindenburg row, and the opposition allegations of misuse of central investigative agencies is likely to continue through the second half of the budget session. There appears to be no way that this is ending right now. The BJP absolutely clear that they would continue to argue, take on the Congress on this issue. We're joined by the Rajya Sabha MP of the BJP, Naresh Bansal, Dr. Nasir Hussain of the Congress Party, the senior journalist Smita Gupta, and the senior editor of Swaraj, Tushar Gupta. Thanks very much for being with us. Naresh Bansal ji, ye hum soch sakte hai ki ye hum samajh sakte hai ki is parliament session jo hai is mudde ko chhod ke aur koi matter, koi issue ko discuss nahi karenge. Matlab ye Rahul Gandhi ne jo kaha hai United Kingdom mein sirf isi pe charcha hoga.
Dekhiye, ye पहली बार देखने को मिल रहा है इस प्रकार का कि विदेश की धरती पर जाकर के जो हमारे देश के दुश्मन देश हैं उनको जो सूट करे वो एक विपक्ष की बड़ी पार्टी के नेता बोल रहे हैं तो उनको देश उन्होंने संसद का अपमान किया है, मीडिया का अपमान किया है, न्यायालय का अपमान किया है, उनको उसके लिए माफी मांगनी चाहिए.
डॉक्टर हुसैन, दिस इज व्हाट the Minister Smriti Irani said. She said, and I quote, he stated while his travel to the UK that democracy was being blown to smithereens. However, this very gentleman in Jammu during the Bharat Jodo Yatra said all is well in India, which was a lie, Mr. Gandhi, your statement in India or your statement in a foreign country? What's the answer to that question?
Vishnu Sam, I have three points to make. Point number one is that the entire issue of Mr. Rahul Gandhi speaking on foreign soil, which is being raised by Bharatiya Janata Party and the government in both the houses, is only to deflect the attention from the real issue. And the main issue with the opposition is raising is the issue of Adani scam that has not only caught the imagination of our nation, but also it is out there in public domain in the entire world. So they know they are caught. They know they are deep-necked involved in the corruption in the highest level possible. They know even the Prime Minister himself is involved in this. That is the reason why they want to deflect it. And coming back to what Mr. Rahul Gandhi said in Cambridge. Cambridge is an academic institution. It was an academic event. In an academic event, we can always analyze, dissect, do critical analysis of any institution, of any democracy, of any organization. Indian democracy, which has been vibrant for the past 75 years, now it is being mishandled. There is attack on our democracy. There is attack on our democratic rights. That is the reason he said there is an attack on the democracy in India by the present regime. Now, if you want to equate this with what Mr. Modi has said in Kuwait, what he has said in UAE, what he has said in China, what he has said in Japan, what he has said in Germany, what he has said in Canada, and what he has said in South Korea. If you compare that, you cannot compare what Modi said on a foreign soil against India, against Indians, against the spirit of India, against the previous governments, against the previous prime ministers, including Atal Bihari Vajpayee, is something what you cannot compare to an academic.
So you're basically accusing the BJP of double standards. I take that. Tushar, would you like to take that on? He's listed specific examples or occasions where Narendra Modi, while traveling abroad, has criticized India, previous governments. So then why is the BJP reacting in this way against Rahul?
Vishnu, what happens is sometimes when we defend the indefensible, we only end up making things worse. Yes, Narendra Modi has criticized the previous governments on numerous occasions, and one can debate whether he was right in his judgment or wrong. That's a separate debate. But no leader, be it Narendra Modi, be it any leader in the past, has gone out and questioned the very idea of India, the very character of India as it exists today. To say that India is a union of states and that union requires conversation and negotiation is not a very mature statement to make on a foreign soil. To say that democracy in India is a public good and there needs to be a reaction to the declining democracy standards in India, which Rahul Gandhi himself said, that there is no reaction, I understand, because there's trade and money involved, is not a very mature remark to make. And at the end, he concluded his statement by saying that this is not a battle, the one opposition is fighting, of the Indian people alone, but that of democracy in the larger context. Now, Vishnu, Rahul Gandhi has all the right to make all the criticism against every government leader there is, all the 300 odd MPs there are. He has every right and he cannot be called anti-national for that. But my problem is when he goes out and questions the federation as it exists. You talk about any democracy across the world, no leader, no well-meaning leader would ever do that to their country. Now, if it comes to the BJP versus the Congress battle, which we have fallen for, we've fallen in that trap where we are beginning to imagine, oh, this is the BJP versus the Congress. It's not, Vishnu. You and I may not vote for the BJP ever in our entire lives, but we wouldn't stand any leader going on foreign soil and requesting the Western governments to intervene in the electoral process.
No, but he's not said that. Tushar, he's not said that. Tushar, he's not said that. In fact, he clarified. He said India's problems need to be sorted out in India.
That is what he's implied. He said there is no reaction.
But you have to give him credit for what he said in that regard. Tushar, he's clarified on that issue over there itself. I think he has part of the same conversation. He said, we have our problems, the solution will emerge from India.
He also ended the same conversation, Vishnu, unfortunately, by saying that this is not a battle of the Indian people alone. I'm very unsure what he was trying to imply there. It's that simple. That is why there is the entire outburst. Forget the BJP and the parliament. There was an entire outburst on social media, even amongst the Congress supporters who criticized that statement. Look at what the regional party spokespersons at the regional parties. All of them have distanced themselves from Rahul Gandhi remarks. The same parties that were lauding Rahul Gandhi for his Bharat Jodo Yatra just 2 months back. Okay. No one wants to be seen
all right, with Tushar, Rahul Gandhi
on pedestal on these remarks.
Got it, Tushar. Dr. Hussain, 1 minute. I want to go across to Smita first. I'll come to you, Dr. Hussain, next.
No, I just want to return to what Mr. Gupta has said now.
All right, go ahead, sir.
See, if somebody can't understand an academic debate, we can't help them. See, right from Gandhi to Nehru to Patel, did support the fight for democracies across the world. We always said the fight against colonialism, fight against imperialism, fight for democracy across the world has to be supported. So in the largest context, what Mr. Rahul Gandhi was trying to make a point is that democracies has to be celebrated, and the defeat of democracy in one part of the world can have adverse impact on the other different parts of the world. He was speaking about conversation between the Council of States, when he was speaking about the federal structure in our country. He said the same thing in the parliament, he said the same thing in Cambridge. What he was trying to say is, states are real entities in Union of India. It is there in Indian constitution. If somebody has not read Indian constitution and somebody has not understood Indian constitution, I'm sorry to say then he has to go back to constitution and read it and then debate on this.
All right.
Conversation in the sense, we need to talk to our people.
All right, both of you, 1 second. Smita's been waiting
patiently. We need to talk to the local authorities in different parts of the country.
Both of you, hold on. Let's not talk over each other.
In regards to talking on foreign soil,
Smita has been waiting patiently.
Different parts of the world. It doesn't matter whether he speaks in Cambridge or whether he speaks in
No, 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 10 seconds to anybody. Hold on. Smita is waiting and I am now the Speaker of the House over here. So, you have to listen to me. Smita, the key issue which the opposition has been stating, primarily the Congress, is that look, the BJP is deflecting from the key issue, and the key issue that they want a joint parliamentary committee probe as far as allegations on Hindenburg Adani are concerned. But now if the Supreme Court has already said that there is a Supreme Court monitored panel, which is composed of people who've got tremendous experience and many of whom are actual specialists, then on what basis does the opposition's demand stand?
No, just because the Supreme Court has, ordered an investigation, that doesn't mean that parliamentarians should be denied the right to, have a committee on the same subject. I don't think that is really the point.
Doesn't it make more sense, Smita, to have a JPC after the Supreme Court report is out?
That, we could argue about the timing of the JPC, but the fact is that the government, ever since the Adani issue came up, has been, blocking the opposition's right to speak on the floor of the House, has been objecting to setting up of such a committee to investigate the matter. This has happened many times in the past. It's not like it's without precedent. And now I think they feel that this Rahul Gandhi's speech in Cambridge can be used against the Congress to show the Congress as an unpatriotic party. But what I want to say on this point is that, patriotism is love of one's country, as I understood it when I grew up. It is not love of one's government, So what he's talking about is the behavior of the present government. He doesn't agree with the way it is operating. Many other people in this country also agree with him. So to conflate the two and say that he is being unpatriotic, he is speaking against the government, and he has also been speaking in academic settings, So it is very clear that the Adani thing hasn't gone away. The Adani thing is very much there, up there. So they need now to target Rahul Gandhi so that Rahul Gandhi gets distracted with this. The Congress gets distracted with, protecting Rahul Gandhi's image instead of just simply saying that, what he said is he criticized the government. He did not criticize India.
I got it. So two parts of that. The entire issue of love for a government versus love for a country. I'll get Tushar to respond to that in one moment, but let me go across to Naresh ji first. Naresh ji, opposition ka jo maang hai, ek JPC ka. JPC kyun nahi hona chahiye?
Dekhiye, Vishnu ji, aap is baat ko manenge ki jab Supreme Court ne Supreme Court ke judge ki adhyakshta mein committee bana di hai, to kya aapko jo ye maang kar rahe hain inko Supreme Court par vishwas nahi hai? Pehle ye kehte the either JPC or investigation in the supervision of the Supreme Court. Ab Supreme Court ne committee banayi hai, to they should wait for that. Uski report aane deni chahiye. Do agency ek hi mamle mein kaise jaanch kar sakti hai? JPC bhi kare, Supreme Court ki committee bhi kare. Is it good?
Okay.
Phir JPC kis kanun ke tahat Hindenburg ko इंटरोगेशन करेगी? मेरे विपक्ष के मित्र बताएं।
डॉक्टर हुसैन रिप्लाई टू
एक जांच सुप्रीम कोर्ट ने की है जिसके अंदर एक्सपर्ट लोग हैं, इकोनॉमिक एक्सपर्ट्स हैं, शेयर मार्केट के एक्सपर्ट हैं, कानून के एक्सपर्ट हैं। मुझे लगता है जेपीसी ज्यादा पावरफुल है सुप्रीम कोर्ट की कमेटी।
Dr. Hussain?
Yeah. पहली बात तो जो है नरेश बंसल जी जो फरमा रहे हैं यहाँ पे उनको ये समझ उनको ये याद दिलाना चाहूंगा कि 2G का जब स्कैम हुआ था जब सुप्रीम कोर्ट में इन्वेस्टिगेशन चल रहा था सीबीआई एक केस रजिस्टर करके सीबीआई इन्वेस्टिगेशन कर रही थी यही बीजेपी पूरा एक बजट का सेशन वॉशआउट की उसके बाद में जेपीसी गठित किया गया और जेपीसी का रिपोर्ट आया। आप जेपीसी में प्रिसाइसली जो बंसल जी जो कह रहे हैं कि फाइनेंशियल एक्सपर्ट्स होते हैं स्टॉक मार्केट के एक्सपर्ट्स होते हैं उसमें बहुत सारा एक्सपर्टीज आती है मनी लॉन्ड्रिंग हुआ है शेल कंपनीज का इस्तेमाल किया गया है यहां से पैसा बाहर गया बाहर से पैसा यहां पे आया है यहां पे स्टॉक्स को आर्टिफिशियली इन्फ्लेट किया गया है स्टॉक्स का मैनिपुलेशन हुआ है तो जितने भी एक्सपर्ट्स हैं वो आके डिपोज करेंगे जेपीसी से। आखिरकार डर क्यों नहीं आप जेपीसी से? मेरा सवाल यह है सुप्रीम कोर्ट में भी जो इन्वेस्टिगेशन जो चल रहा है किसी की एक याचिका पे चल रहा है गवर्नमेंट वहां पे नहीं गई थी गवर्नमेंट ने सुप्रीम कोर्ट को अप्रोच नहीं की गवर्नमेंट ने यह तय नहीं किया कि सुप्रीम कोर्ट मॉनिटर्ड प्रोब होगा गवर्नमेंट किसी की याचिका पे कुछ टर्म्स ऑफ रेफरेंस पे वो इन्वेस्टिगेशन कर रही है। हम चाहते हैं कि पूरा का पूरा मामला इन टोटैलिटी उसकी इंक्वायरी होना चाहिए दूध का दूध पानी का पानी होना चाहिए साथ साथ में और जितने अपोजिशन लीडर्स को टारगेट करके सीबीआई ईडी आईटी जो समन्स भेजती है जो अरेस्ट करवाती है 50-50 घंटे जो बिठा के रखती है आज कहां है वो सीबीआई कहां है वो ईडी कहां है वो आईटी सरकार क्यों उनको डायरेक्शन नहीं देती है। आज 200 पार्लियमेंट के एमपी मार्च करते हैं तो उनसे मिलने के लिए इनकार करती है तो यही है ईडी का रोल हिंदुस्तान के अंदर।
डॉक्टर हुसैन वन सेकेंड यू मेड योर पॉइंट बंसल साहब रिप्लाई।
देखिए मिस्टर नसीर हुसैन जी आप बहुत पार्लियामेंटर हैं एक्सपीरियंस पार्लियामेंटर हैं आपको यह समझना चाहिए कि सुप्रीम कोर्ट इज द सुप्रीम एज पर लीगलिटी इज कंसर्न सुप्रीम कोर्ट की कमेटी की रिपोर्ट का इंतजार करिए आपको जल्दी क्या हो रही है और आप जहां तक सरकार की बात कर रहे हैं कि सुप्रीम कोर्ट ने 100 मोटो बनाई है क्या सरकार ने विरोध किया है उसमें क्या विरोध किया है गवर्नमेंट ने उसमें 2G वाज टोटली द मैटर ऑफ द इंटरनल मैटर ऑफ इंडिया इसमें हिंडनबर्ग इन्वॉल्व्ड है जो जिसकी अपनी अपनी कोई क्रेडिबिलिटी नहीं है जो हिंडनबर्ग हम पर बोल रहा है अमेरिका की रिसर्च कंपनी है अमेरिका की रिसर्च
का इन्वॉल्वमेंट यही है कि हम सरकार को जो
हमारे इकोनॉमिक सेटअप को कह रहा है वो हिंडनबर्ग अमेरिका के 2 बैंक फेल हो गए आज।
बंसल
साहब 30 seconds मेक योर पॉइंट डॉक्टर हुसैन आई विल गिव यू 30 seconds ऑल्सो तुषार विल हैव टू वेट
जस्ट लेट मी कंप्लीट
प्लीज गो अहेड सर।
ये विपक्ष केवल जो आज पूरे देश भर के अंदर राहुल गांधी से माफी मांगने की बात पूरे देश में हो रही है देश के डेमोक्रेटिक सेटअप को देश की जुडिशरी को देश की पार्लियामेंट को जिस प्रकार से विदेश में बैठ करके बदनाम किया गया है पूरे देश में वो माफी मांगने की बात कर रहे हैं इसलिए उससे वो डाइवर्ट करने के लिए ये इस इश्यू को उठा रहे हैं।
ओके अदरवाइज 30 seconds इज ओवर
कमेटी बना दी है।
हुसैन साहब योर 30 seconds स्टार्ट्स नाउ प्लीज गो अहेड।
देखिए नरेश बंसल जी खुद कह रहे हैं कि इशू क्यों उन्होंने लेके आया राहुल गांधी वाला इशू हम लोगों ने जो बजट सेशन का पहला पार्ट था जब से लगातार ये इशू को हम उठा रहे हैं सरकार की तरफ से कोई रिएक्शन नहीं आया जो प्रधानमंत्री हर किसी चीज के ऊपर जो बोलते हैं चुप्पी क्यों साधे हैं और वो क्यों इसके ऊपर एक्शन नहीं ले रहे हैं क्यों जेपीसी से भाग रहे हैं अगर ये दूध के धुले हुए हैं अगर प्रधानमंत्री इसमें इन्वॉल्व नहीं है अगर वो अदानी को लेके दुनिया के कोने कोने वो घूमे नहीं है उनको आउट ऑफ कॉन्ट्रैक्ट उन्होंने दिलाया नहीं है श्रीलंकन गवर्नमेंट को इन्होंने फोन करके इन्होंने रेकमेंड नहीं किया है SBI LIC में गरीब लोगों का पैसा उन्होंने दिलवाया नहीं अदानी को तो डर क्यों रहे हैं Why are you afraid of having a JPC? Let there be a JPC.
Tushar, why don't you also make your point but also answer what Smita was saying, which I thought made a lot of sense. when she said that Rahul Gandhi is not being unpatriotic, he cannot like this government, but keep love of government separate from love of the country.
Vishnu, one simple thing. This is not the India of the 90s and the 2000s that will swallow up any rhetoric in the name of academia. It's not about the love for the government. When Rahul Gandhi says, oh, we are a union of states that requires negotiation and conversation, does he mean by his logic that tomorrow if a separatist movement starts in any part of the country, he as a prime minister, assuming he becomes one, will be open to negotiate with them? And what death of democracy is he talking about? It's the same democracy where he was able to tour the length and breadth of the country. The same election commission that announced his party as the winner in Himachal Pradesh and most recently in a Congress bipoll in Maharashtra. The same judicial institutions that have given him relief in the Nasher Hill case and also his spokespersons and also made him a part of selecting the chief election commissioner very, very recently. And the same media, which he says is sold out to the BJP, that gave him every day, that gave him coverage every day during the Bharat Jodo Yatra. So when Rahul Gandhi says that democracy is dead in India, I would really like him to elaborate.
All right, okay. So you disagree with democracy being dead in India? What was 1975 all about? We'll have to leave it over there. I'm sorry, Smita, I'm totally out of time on this program. All right, Smita, go ahead, 30 seconds.
Yeah, you know, Mr. Tushar Gupta just talked about, will Rahul Gandhi talk to separatist movements? Separatist movements have been spoken to by government after government, you know, since independence. So that's not a big deal, you know. It depends on the situation.
All right, it depends on the situation.
To say that they never talk to separatist movements, leaders of separatist movements, that's, you know,
all
not
right.
True.
Okay, Smita, interrupting, out of time. I'd like to thank you all very much for being with us. Good night.